Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Stoke, one thing we really haven't considered a whole heck of a lot here, and really across the board, not just this show, but really across all of our hosts here at The Fan and maybe even some others in town, that the Broncos could possibly move up in the draft. If anything, when it's come to movement, we've considered the Broncos maybe moving back, but I haven't heard too much chatter about the Broncos moving up.
Right.
You got to turn your mic on and do radio.
You all right over there?
Mm-hmm. How about you?
Nope.
USA Today.
I was reading about, I'm going to hijack your segment now. How about that?
Go ahead.
Yep. Broncos are wearing game jerseys.
Yes.
For practice.
Yes.
It got me thinking. I'm hoping that we're not supposed to do this later.
That would involve you looking at the rundown in advance.
Yeah, I like to just not look at it. Just kind of like to fly by the seat of my pants.
Right.
I had to do that once.
Okay.
One time in my career.
Where? Where and why?
Baltimore Ravens. And Vic might have got it from Baltimore with John Harbaugh. My last stint in Baltimore. Not my first one.
Hated it. Really?
Hated it. Just let me wear my practice jersey, please. It's a lot more comfortable. It's easier to put on. You know, these game jerseys are tight. You got to like almost dislocate your shoulder to get your arm in there, and then it's all tight, and it's just, like, uncomfortable. There's a reason why you have a practice jersey, right?
Well, did you hear his explanation?
Well, I did not, but I would just guess that, hey, we want to practice like we play, and that's what we wear for games, so we want to get used to it now, and that's what I would assume. Is that what he said?
I have his response right here.
Okay, go ahead.
He says, quote, "The whole reason we do that is to cut down on the grabbing. When you wear the loose shirts, it's very easy, almost unavoidable, for the players to grab each other when they're going against each other. Whether it be wideouts, defensive backs, the interior linemen, it's just so easy to grab those loose jerseys. It's not easy to grab in the game because they're so tight. So we want to make it game-like as much as we can. That's why we practice in them." I got to be honest. That is a... Like, if you want to change something... For the sake of change, I'll kind of roll my eyes. You provide some real rationale like he did.
Yeah.
I'm with it.
You know, he puts it that way. He's 1,000% right. That's, you know, those loose jerseys in practice, it can make a defense, secondary cornerbacks, or offensive linemen a little bit lazy. Right, because what do? You just like you get beat, you kind of hold.
Yeah.
And you get into bad habits doing those types of things. But if you have these tight jerseys on, it's not as easy. And that's what you're going to wear in games. So you have to get used to not grabbing and holding so much. So, look, I mean, that's a great explanation. But I'm just saying as a player, I hated it.
Sure.
I hated it. But he makes a lot of sense in what he's saying there, for sure. So...
You know, you want to know what is
if they could get a few less holds for Garrett Bowles, then I think we'll all take the tight jerseys.
Yeah, I don't care if he's got to sleep in your game jersey.
That's right.
I like thinking outside the box. We've talked about this for a couple of years, you and I, that the NFL there's so much groupthink that goes on. That you watch an NFL practice from 1998, chances are... it's going to look very similar to tomorrow. So I like the idea of saying, you want to know what? This is my first opportunity to do this. You know, Vic Fangio is a first-time head coach at 60 years old. So we're doing things his way. And I like someone who is so old school at 60 actually doing something very different and against the grain.
Yep. Yeah, you've always been that way. You kind of like that outside the box thinking, hey, let's not just continue to do it this way because it's been done that way. And certainly this is a little bit different. And I don't think it can hurt the Broncos, right? It's not going to hurt them at all. It's only going to make them better and hopefully not create bad habits. And as a receiver, sometimes, you know, when guys can just grab and pull your jersey really quick and easy because it's so loose and they get in bad habits, then you're not able to, you know, maybe complete a pass. And so that's one less rep that you do because the guy's grabbing and holding because he doesn't want to get beat. So I really like that explanation, and I'm just glad I don't have to wear them all day.
Right, right. I hear it, and I'm sure guys will kind of roll their eyes or maybe groan about it, you know, after they've done it for 50 times in a row and he still wants you to do it. And again, I want to make something clear. Like, yes, I am a fan of outside-the-box thinking, but again, not just for outside-the-box thinking's sake. You know, I know when we go to training camp and I'm looking at 70 guys standing around for 15 straight minutes, I'm like, there's got to be a better use of our time. You know, why aren't we using both sides of one football field and having two things going on at once? And just you know, I walk away sometimes at training camp just going, why do we do the things that we do? You know, maybe because it's just always done it that way. And maybe just thinking about it differently would be progressive. So I like it. I like his willingness to do it despite being a 60-year-old. And that's the last kind of thing that I thought I would see from Vic, to be honest. So,
I mean, that's a good thing to see, right?
Sure.
You know, your head coach that's an older head coach, first-time head coach, and stuck in the 1960s.
Yeah.
No, we're going to do it this way.
But if you were to guess of anyone that would be like that, it might be Vic.
That's right.
So I like it.
It's a good sign. I do too.
I like it. Forward thinking. I like it. We are going to talk to...
Have you seen the schedule? I mean, like some of the schedule's already leaking out. It always does that. Like, there's a schedule release.
Every year.
Right, but then all of a sudden you look on Twitter or whatever, and it's like, Schefter's got this game, this team's playing here, this team's playing here, and this day's like, well, what is the schedule release going to be for? I mean, most of the games are already out.
Same thing happens with the draft, that they try to temper.
They've done a better job at that.
They have.
Of not leaking the names out. But these games that are coming out already, I'm like, I kind of like... 6 o'clock tonight. Bam, here it comes.
Sure. You see, the Patriots are opening up with the Steelers.
Saw it. Yep.
Sunday night matchup, kicking things off. You want to know what? It's going to be here before we know it, Stoke.
It is.
It's going to be here before we know it. All right. I got to get to this. By the way, I want to put it in just in your ear. We're going to talk to Pedro Gomez at 1:30 of ESPN. The Rocks have won 3 in a row. And are showing signs of life, like Hulk Hogan kicking out of a 3 count. So they're not dead yet.
Ooh,
not dead
count.
Yet. All right. USA Today put out a mock draft that focused on possible trade scenarios. They have the Broncos moving up the board, not back. Who'd they pick? I'll tell you next. So USA Today put out a mock draft, and what it was, and you're starting to see these as we get later into the season, NFL draft 8 days away, you start to see some of these trade-centric drafts, and just teasing the idea of if your team was going to make a move, would they go up or down, and who would they grab in whichever scenario that they're outlining. They have the Broncos moving up.
Moving up.
They have them moving up. And however unlikely this is, which I do believe it is rather unlikely, it's interesting to take a look at it. They have the Broncos moving up from 10 to 5 and trading with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Who do they grab?
10 to 5, I mean, the quarterback?
TJ Hockenson. They have him moving up the draft board. And taking the tight end from Iowa, my guy, TJ Hockenson. And the explanation that they give, it says John Elway will finally address a position that's long festered by obtaining one of this draft's cleanest players. Love that phrase. Hockenson could be an immediate difference maker, providing first downs in the passing game, for an attack that lost wide receiver Demaryius Thomas last year while boosting an offensive line that has struggled. I don't like the idea of moving up from 10 to 5, but you know how much I love the idea of TJ Hockenson being a Denver Bronco for the next decade.
I don't mind it. Look, if you look at this guy as that type of tight end, he's probably not going to get to 10. You know, I didn't know that that's who they had them taking, the Broncos doing and taking. And we were talking a couple breaks ago, and we were talking about who would be a great fit for TJ Hockenson, Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
And where do they sit? At 9.
The Bills sit at 9.
One pick before the Broncos. I mean, they want to get weapons for Josh Allen.
That's right.
They're not going defense. If they can get weapons for Josh Allen and they can get a premier tight end, well, that's what they're going to do. So if you love T.J. Hockenson, if Elway and company love him, you're probably going to have to move up to get him. Probably. So do it, right? I mean, I'm not opposed to that. I wouldn't prefer it. You'd love to just have him fall to you, you get him. But if you look at a guy and you say, man, that guy's going to be a difference maker for us.
Yeah.
We will use him for the next 5-10 years. Make the move and go get this guy. We haven't had a tight end, you know, a dynamic tight end in years. We need one. Certainly could use one to add another dimension to this offense. Pair him with these young, dynamic offensive players that we have. Royce Freeman, Phillip Lindsay, Cortland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton.
Yeah.
Who else?
Emmanuel Sanders, Tim Patrick.
I was talking about young.
Oh,
young.
Young guys. Tim Patrick.
Garrett Bowles. Tim Patrick. But look, if you could put him with these guys, I mean, you got a good young nucleus to build your offense around.
Nice young core, right?
Give some weapons to Rich Gangarello and Joe Flacco. So
you saw the way he used George Kittle. We saw it up close and personal.
A little bit too up close and personal.
A little bit too.
Yeah, I don't like to have that type of view. I like to watch it against another team.
Right.
So look, I mean, why not? Why not? If you love him, go get him. If you absolutely love him and you think that you'll be regretting it if you don't get him, then look, don't be passive, be aggressive and go get the guy.
Right.
And I'm fine with it.
You know, yesterday I'm listening to The Drive and our new friend, James Merrillat, who has just joined us here at The Fan to really bolster 1043thefan.com. They were having a conversation, and he said something. I don't mean to call him out just after his first show, but here I am.
But I thought James did a good job.
Oh,
nice work, James.
Oh, he did.
Really good job.
But they got to talking about TJ Hockenson.
He said
that the idea of drafting TJ Hockenson at 10 was insane. That was the word insane.
Oh.
And I think that type of mindset is insane. What about drafting who Daniel Jeremiah said is the safest player in this year's draft, who Mel Kiper said is the closest thing to Gronk he's seen?
Well, he said that because he plays a tight end position or because he's evaluated him and he doesn't think he's that good of a player.
I think it's the former.
Right.
You're holding a positional preference against him, that because you play tight end, it's quote insane to take him at 10. Of course it's not insane.
I mean, this isn't number one, this is 10.
And it's not about, stop thinking about tight end. Think about TJ Hockenson. Don't get bogged down with the position. Think about the player. And when you hear a guy like Mel Kiper, who's been doing this since, you know, the Stone Age, saying that he will line up in the slot and shred the middle of a defense. He's got unbelievable hands. And then on the next play, he'll line up and blow up an edge rusher. Like, this is the guy. This is why we're seeing him go even before the Broncos.
Right.
And by the way, another layer of this conversation is that the Broncos, like you said, haven't had a legitimate tight end in a half of a decade. And then another layer on top of it is the last year that Joe Flacco started 16 games 2 years back, he was second in the NFL in targeting tight ends. He needs one. And then another layer to that is our whole room has big question marks over him.
Yep.
So I don't understand this sort of stereotype against the position. If the guy's great and generational, he's worth it. Ask Quentin Nelson, who was a guard and was scoffed at, that you could take him at 5. If we took him at 5, I think we'd all be very happy with it.
Sure. Absolutely. Especially tight end spot. And we're not talking about 5 or Well, I mean, they were talking about moving up to five, or you know, if you're talking about like number one overall pick, number two overall pick, you're probably not going to pick a tight end.
Probably not.
Not going to pick a guard, right? But certainly at 10 or you know, a little bit higher. I mean, I have no issue with that at all. This guy's going to be a great player and going to be one of the top tight ends. We've seen how important tight end play is in the NFL. And if the guy's a two-way tight end, I mean, a guy that can block in the running game, that can maul you and be nasty, but also in the passing game, he can be in-line tight end, stretch the football field. We can put him in the slot. We can put him outside. I mean, those guys are very valuable. So
right.
If he's a great one, I don't care if it's at 5. I don't care if it's at 10. Take him.
I love it.
That's an important position in the NFL these days.
And that's a further layer, that the position has been revolutionized. And you say we've seen what an effective tight end can do. Yes, we have. But we also have simultaneously seen what your offense looks like when you don't have one. It is going into a fight with one hand tied behind your back.
Yeah, and it's like looking at the running back position and saying the running back position is dead. You can find these guys all over the place. Don't select one very high. And then you see the Cowboys take Zeke and, you know, who's the other one that went really high? Barkley. And it's like, okay, look,
Christian McCaffrey.
These guys are great.
Yeah.
Right? So they're special.
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Take them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. A couple days ago, it was just about 72 hours ago, there was some folks that I know that were leaving the Rockies for dead. And much like the Undertaker kicking out of a casket, just like this, we got signs of life. Three straight games. Has it changed the narrative? I want to bounce this.
I don't
know
if they're kicking out of the casket.
we're gonna bounce this thought off Pedro Gomez of ESPN next. Friend of the show, Pedro Gomez of ESPN, stops by Stokely and Zach. Little bit different tone here.
Pedro, we're back, baby! We're back!
Well, I'll say this. It was ugly there for a second. And not that, you know, three games is going to be a hard pivot for a whole season, but it is nice to see them win three in a row. It's their longest winning streak of the season. And there's a couple things, thankfully, that we can point to in terms of positivity.
Well, there's a few really big things. I mean, Nolan Arenado hitting home runs in three consecutive games, beating, even though it's a two-game series, you beat the first-place Padres both games in San Diego. So, I mean, there's a lot, you know, Herman Marquez, the way he's pitched. You've got Kyle Freeland on the mound tomorrow, who is your opening day starter, and he is supposed to either stop losing streaks or continue winning streaks. So there's a lot going on right now. Now, it's a tougher assignment. You've got the first-place Phillies with a really strong offense. But, hey, those are the kind of games you got to start winning as well.
Yeah, Pedro, I look at it, and two nights ago when I saw Antonio Senzatella go out there and pitch the way that he pitched, looking like the guy 2 years ago who I thought could be the ace of the staff, I said, whoa, if we could get more of that from him, and you pair him with Kyle Freeland and Marquez, now you have something, because 3 through 5 have been so inconsistent for the Rockies. Senzatella, to me, could be the wild card in this whole turnaround.
There's no doubt. And look, you're asking a lot from young pitchers. Even though Senzatella had a nice season a couple of years ago, you know, his resume is not long, just like Kyle Freeland's is not long, just like Marquez's is not long. So you're asking a lot out of a young pitching staff. The thing is that they delivered in the last year or two and showed, hey, we're capable of doing this at the big league level. So at some point, it has to be more than just young production. It's got to be consistent production. And that's what has not happened so far the first 3 weeks of the season. But, you know, this Rock, look, I was speaking to a major league scout just about 3 days ago about the Rockies. And he said, look, that roster is way too good for them to be playing the way they're playing. They will turn things around at some point. The issue is whether they can consistently start to play good baseball. And, you know, like you said, three games is not a pivot point for the entire season, but it certainly is a good launching pad for things to start looking better for them.
Pedro Gomez of ESPN dropping by Stokely and Zach here. What has been more encouraging for you to see? The starting pitching in the last couple of days, Senzatella, John Gray, or the fact that the Rockies have scored 17 runs in the last three games?
It's the offense. Look, pitching should be more than adequate, but the way the offense was struggling for that 2.5 week span, that was just the head scratcher. That's where you said, what is going on here? So, the offense needs to feel good about itself. And I would say after these last 3 days, they should absolutely be feeling really, really good about themselves. The Phillies are in first place in the NL East. They are a good offensive club. So the pitching staff certainly has its work cut out for them, but the Phillies outside of Aaron Nola don't have dominant pitching. So this is a team that can be scored on. And for that reason, I think these four games against the Phillies are going to probably deliver some messages as to where this offense is right now, because you're not looking at, Glavin, Smoltz, and Maddox. You're looking at guys that can be hit, and that's where I think you've got to see whether the offense is really here or not.
So this next series for the Rockies, when you look at playing the Phillies, it's on the offense. I mean, the offense has got to step up. Is that kind of what you're telling us here?
To me, yes, because the pitching is going to be kind of even on both sides. It's good pitching, but it's not dominant lockdown pitching. Certainly, there are guys that are capable of it. Look, Kyle Freeland, we know, has been a lockdown guy on occasion. He hasn't shown it so far this year, so anything you get out of that is going to be good. But I think, to me, these games are going to be won 8-6, 6-5, those type of scores. So I think it's more on the offense.
Pedro Gomez of ESPN stopping by. Any forecast of this next four-game set against those Phillies?
Like I said, I think they're going to be higher-scoring games. Of course, now watch it be 1-0, 2-1, because I said that. But to me, it should be high-scoring. And now it's going to be indicative on whether the offense is really here or not. Like I said, the fact that you've got your best player, your best hitter, having hit home runs three consecutive games, that really should be a spark for everyone else. And, the Rockies' offense tends to go around either Arenado or Story. And if those guys, one or both of those guys get hot, that usually is a very good indication of what is going to happen. I would predict a lot of runs over these 4 days.
Pedro, looking at the NL West, Padres, Dodgers tied at the top, Diamondbacks 2 back, Giants 2.5, and we're 4.5 back. How do you think, who are the pretenders and who are the true contenders in this division? I'm surprised that the Padres are playing well as they are. Obviously surprised that the Rockies are playing as bad as they are. Who do you think is a contender and who do you think is a pretender?
Yeah, I'll take the latter first, and then the pretenders, I think, are the D-backs and the Giants. And the reason I say that is, look, the D-backs lost Goldschmidt, Pollock, and Corbin. They lose Souza before the season even started. It's really hard to make up for four key components like that over the course of 162 games. They're doing right now really well. They're fighting. They're playing good ball. It's just hard to maintain when you lose that kind of talent over 162. The Giants, they plucked 5 guys off the waiver wire in the last week of spring training that were on the opening week roster. So that right there is an indication that there are issues with that organization at the current moment. So, again, don't think they have the staying power for 162 games. The Padres are somewhat surprising. I think they're about a year ahead of schedule, but you know what? You get a young club and all of a sudden they start winning, they can start to believe in themselves. So that's a club that very well could stick around for a while. They still have pitching holes. The Dodgers and the Rockies, to me, are the two teams that should finish 1-2 in whichever order they finish. Over the course of 162, you tend to win what you're supposed to win. And again, this is why you call it a batting average or an earned run average. It's what you do for the whole season, not just for a 10-day period.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to the series against the Phillies. You know, the Rockies are the only team left in baseball that don't have a win at their home field.
At home.
Yeah. And I do believe that's going to change very quickly here. Pedro, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Pedro.
All right, boys. Take care, guys.
All right, take care. That's Pedro Gomez of ESPN. We meet with him every single Wednesday at about 1:30. Appreciate him stopping by. And it's so nice to see signs of life. And it starts with Nolan. He's got 6 RBIs in the last 3 games.
It just seems like yesterday we were saying he doesn't have a home run. Now he's got 3. Bam. So need power from him. Need those big plays from him. And if you're not getting it from him, then the Rockies don't have a chance offensively. He has got to be that guy. And him showing life right now is huge because they need it in a big way.
What is Joe Flacco's approach to gaining the belief and the trust of his brand new teammates? We'll hear it from him next. What is Joe Flacco's approach to gaining the belief and trust of his new teammates? When he's the quarterback, Flacco was asked the following yesterday after practice and how he'll just approach being a leader on this team and earning the trust of his teammates. This is what Joe said.
As a new quarterback, you know, who's just naturally a leader on the team, my job, the first thing I want to do is prove to everybody on this football team, the guys that play on this field, that I can play and I can be their quarterback. You know, because then, you know, anything is possible. If they really believe that I'm the guy, I believe I'm the guy. If they start to believe that I'm the guy, well, that's when your leadership can take off and the team can really take off.
That's only through showing, right?
Yeah, you got to do it. That's it. It's all about going out there and performing.
What do you make of that answer?
Love it. He's spot on, right? Got to go out there and do it. Got to show them that, hey, I'm the guy. And obviously it's different now, but you can still show them. Go out there and look the part. Take command, take control, and be that type of quarterback. And it really starts, you know, when it matters the most. But certainly it can begin now. And you can earn those guys' trust now. And you can prove to them now that you're the guy. So he's spot on. He knows. He gets it, right? I mean, Joe's a smart guy. So that's what you have to do. You can't come in here and rah, 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 rah. You got to go out there on the field and in the meeting rooms and show them that you're the guy for this job. And you're going to be different than the last...
Count them up.
5, 6, 7. Not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4. A lot. Okay, how about that? Goodness. So, I mean, that's what you got to do. And it happens on the field. It happens on the football field. And first day was, what, yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
That's when it starts.
Joe gets it.
Yeah.
Joe gets it. You know, this is not, well, by contrast to what you were just saying, comparing the quarterback since Peyton, it was so telling. To hear Case Keenum after one season here, they said, you know, what did you learn? He said, I learned how to be a franchise quarterback. That's a right. lesson that Joe Flacco learned a decade ago. So he doesn't need, there's not some learning period on the attention that it's going to come with, the criticism that it's going to come with, the glaring nature of playing, being one of the 32 guys that is walking planet Earth. Joe's got it. He's got it. But I do want to say this. I do think this stage of the offseason, all the Broncos at the facility, the install, working together for the first time, I think it matters. I do. I do think it matters.
Agree.
And I think a tone can be set, and I think leadership qualities can be established, and I think trust can, those building blocks can starting to be put in place. But then, once you reach a certain point in September, it's like an Etch-a-Sketch. It just all gets shaken away. At one point, it's there. And this is that point now. And it does matter. But then, that goes up in smoke.
I mean, you look at last year. Case had it, right? I mean, Case was a leader, and guys believed in Case.
Yeah.
All of that, right?
I remember Jeff Heuermann said it after OTA. He said he throws the most catchable ball I've ever seen. And it sounds great. And
it does.
And it probably looked great. But throw in adversity, and it again, the Etch-A-Sketch just could shake it up.
Sometimes it was great for the other team, very catchable for the other team.
Yeah, Earl Thomas, he thought he threw a great ball.
Yep, very catchable.
Very,
don't even need to go to training camp. Come right out. Oh, catchable ball, thank you. But yeah, then it gets reset. You got to show, like, when it matters the most that you can deliver.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's all fine and dandy in the offseason if you look the part and look like the guy, but when you haven't done it at a place before, you got to do it when it matters the most, and that's on Sunday. So, obviously, there's a process, and the process started this week and will continue through the whole offseason, and then it gets reset once the regular season starts. You got to deliver when it matters the most.
Yeah, and until that point comes, we're only going to learn so much. We're only going to learn so much. Doesn't mean you can't learn anything or can't learn something. But we're only going to learn so much until it's truly just nut-cutting time. And the lights are on, and you got a team with a different jersey, the opposite of you. And until that point, you're only going to know so much. This is Joe Flacco from yesterday.
Well, I think terminology-wise, I'm familiar with a lot. You know, I really am. That's kind of made the transition easy. I think the play pass stuff, there's a lot of stuff that's familiar with that. The keepers, I think some of the dropback games are a little different. But overall, I would say there's a pretty good amount of familiarity with it.
That is him talking about the familiarity and the similarities in this offense compared to when he ran Kubiak's offense in 2014 and what's different. And it sounds like there's already groundwork.
Right.
There's already a baseline for
him. Yeah, which should be, right? I mean, you should have a foundation of some similarities between the two offenses. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of differences also, which is great. I'm glad there's differences. But to be able to have that foundation and to be able to have something that you are comfortable with and have done in the past, that's a great thing. So, obviously, you know, having that background with Gary Kubiak and this kind of style of an offense is a positive.
Let me ask you this. Last year, if you remember it, and folks of this, fans of this show will remember you saying this because you said it early and often. You said you were expecting a slow start.
Yeah.
You said you were expecting a slow start offensively.
Yep.
And I asked you the same question this time around. Do you believe we have a new offensive coordinator, Rich Gangarello? It's the first time, I say he's new offensive coordinator. He's new to being an offensive coordinator in addition to being our new offensive coordinator, a new quarterback. But at the same time, there is some semblance of familiarity. You just heard Joe talk about it. He's ran the offense. Where do you come out on your expectations? I'm just sort of springing this on you. Your expectations in terms of a start.
Slow. It's hard. It's hard to play offense at a high level in the NFL. Usually defenses are always, they always usually start quicker than offenses. Takes the offense a little while to get up to speed. And that's just a natural, that's just the way the NFL works. This is the way the NFL is. And then you put on top of all of that a new offense, new scheme, new playbook, new coaches. Usually it takes some time to, you know, work the iron out the wrinkles there. And I expect the same with this offense. I expect it to be slow start. Lean on this defense. Be great defense. But that doesn't mean that you can't be productive. You can't win football games. Obviously, take care of the football. Make plays when the plays present themselves. But I don't think you're going to go look at an offense that's going up and down the football field. I think it's going to take some time. That's the way it is. It would shock me if this offense was, you know, firing on all cylinders early on. I mean, I felt like even when Peyton was here that, and I know we've gone through the stats and we really didn't start slow. I mean, we put up a lot of points and
but it
and
felt things, like it.
But it felt like it. It did. It felt like we just weren't quite there yet. And then after that San Diego game, you know, we had our bye week and it was just like, okay, we got things rolling. But it just doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it takes years to master offenses and to be great offensively. And then you're still working on it, still trying to master it. So and to think it's just going to happen overnight like that, that's why when you're changing in the NFL, it's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good.
You want to know what's weird about last year's start and you saying expect a slow start? First game, they scored 27 points.
First game,
the Broncos
this
scored.
This past year?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
remember? Seattle Seahawks.
I came in here, I was doing jumping jacks. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I don't care about the interceptions. Explosive plays. It was unbelievable.
Yep. Scored 27 in their first game. And only one other time was able to score 27 or more. Just once. You remember which game that was?
Oh, man. No.
The JV game. Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, yeah.
Put it up there. Put it up there.
We're going to win this one.
Yeah.
We got this one.
I was like, oh, Von Tuff talking them. They scored 45 on the
Joe
Cardinals.
Joe Namath, too.
Yeah, right.
Guarantee it.
He guaranteed the victory against the Arizona,
and then,
Arizona
then the
Cardinals.
Next week, he's like, what, you think I'm crazy?
Yeah, you going to guarantee against the Chiefs again? Keep it rolling? No, I'm not crazy.
I hope you elect to kick ass is what I hope you do.
Oh, my goodness. It is interesting because it was actually, and not to just, you know, sort of call you out, but it was actually the opposite of what you thought. It was 27 the first week, 20 the next week, and then just nothing. I mean, nothing.
I remember being shocked with how, you know, you had those interceptions, but besides interceptions, just being shocked with the ability to look like an offense that was going to be really good.
Mm.
It was short-lived.
It was short-lived. It was 2-0 start. It was a 2-0 start, followed by 6 of 7 losses.
The Fugazi.
Fugazi.
Yeah.
It's cubic zirconium.
Yeah. They got us.
They did get us. A couple years in a row, too.
Yeah.
Because they started 3-1 the previous year. And we're going to have a conversation tomorrow, because we got the schedules getting released tonight. We're going to have a conversation tomorrow I think is interesting. Talking about the dynamic of the schedule, the structure of the schedule, home and away, and what can be advantageous for the Broncos this time around that's been different from recent history. But I'll say this. Guess what we just found out?
Don't know. What did we find out?
We found out who, where, and when the Denver Broncos will be opening the 2019 season.
I thought it was supposed to be at 6 o'clock.
I got it right here in front of me.
You.
I'm going to tell you exactly who it is, but first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?